My name is Uwe Alschner. My father was a refugee from what is now Poland. The Nazi past has been elephant in the room. My father, he was 10 years old when they fled, when his father died on the flight. So it was a traumatic experience. I was the first to go to university. I am a trained historian, got a PhD in history. The very nature of science is debate, is dispute. So a disputation is how you win your PhD thesis. You put up a thesis that you defended in a dispute. So therefore, not allowing dissent, not allowing debate in the scientific arena is absolutely unscientific, is nonsensical, and it's very, very dangerous. And this also applies for democracy, which is an exchange of ideas. When someone as highly qualified as Professor Susharit Bhakti, who in April of 2020 issued a number of questions to the German Chancellor, asking her to explain why she could be so certain that what they were doing was the only and the right way to do. And this completely went unanswered. More than that, Professor Bhakti has been vilified ever since just for asking questions with a sound scientific background and track record. He has many publications to his name. He has many discoveries to his name, even in terms of immunology. So how can you brush aside concerns of someone like this? This is very, very troubling. This is undemocratic, and it is very dangerous for a society such as ours, the Germans, who have been trained to be aware of the beginnings, to never let this happen again, what happened once in the German name and which led to the Holocaust. Censorship has always been a measure which those in power had resorted to in order to shut down an exchange of ideas, simply because it went against their personal or dynastic interests. This is something which happened also, especially in the Nazi era, as Germany degraded rapidly into a state of absolute obeisance and cult for the Führer. And the burning of books was ritually performed in every major city and everywhere around the country. This is something which happened then, and to see this happen now is deeply disturbing and is certainly a parallel in terms of what the beginnings were of the Third Reich. I am aware that it is very, very delicate for Germans to make references to the Holocaust. We are being trained to honor the uniqueness and to honor the victims, but not draw comparisons, which is, of course, also ahistorical, undemocratic, and even doing injustice to those who suffered and who were victims in the Holocaust. In Brussels this year, a huge demonstration was disbanded and was called off. It was very, very disturbing also because it was the day where you, Vera Sharaf, have been speaking on analogies, on similarities, which you saw. So this is something which is absolutely in line with what the Commission of Elie Wiesel recommended, so that there be persons of moral authority to alert the public to possible dangers which may lead to a new Holocaust or even just parts thereof. So it is something which is very, very explicit in this report. Not only has the moral landscape of human reality been altered by the Holocaust, but the acceleration of technology now threatens human existence itself. By focusing on the dangers inherent in the ends and means of a technological, bureaucratic society, study of the Holocaust and its implications can encourage a renewal of commitment to sanity and humanity. So back in 1979, there was awareness that our society, with all its technological progress, which has been achieved over centuries, and especially in the past couple of decades, poses an existential threat to humanity. As a historian, I find it very disturbing that people who are hinting at analogies and similarities then and now are immediately being accused of being anti-Semitic, fascist, neo-Nazi or whatever. On the second page of the introductory letter to the president, it says, "The most vital lessons to be drawn from the Holocaust era is that Auschwitz was possible because the enemy of the Jewish people and of mankind. And it is always the same enemy. It was not just Germans who were active in the Holocaust, but it was part of a long established ideology in which eugenics play a role, and even today also transhumanism, which is a newer concept, but is clearly rooted in the idea of eugenics. And there are many, many continuities between those who pushed eugenics ideas at the beginning of the 20th century and helped bring it into Germany and implant this ideology into the Nazi cult, into the Nazi ideology, which didn't exist until the early 1920s. So here we see that the commission of Elie Wiesel did have an understanding that this is something which can happen again, and therefore which needs to be taken seriously and needs to be looked out for. So the Holocaust Commission recommends that a committee on conscience composed of distinguished moral leaders in America be appointed. This committee would receive reports of genocide, actual or potential, anywhere in the world. In the event of an outbreak, it would have access to the president and Congress and the public in order to alert the national conscience and stimulate worldwide action to bring such acts to a halt.
Both of my grandparents came over with the Project Paperclip initially to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio, then ultimately to Los Angeles. My grandfather worked for Aerospace Corporation, does a lot of work with the Air Force. Yeah, he was brought to this country because he was one of the scientists that worked for Wernher von Braun, specifically in the wind tunnels as a physicist. That's where he met my grandmother. She was one of the secretaries there. She worked for Wernher von Braun and did a lot of the recording of their measurements in the wind tunnels. They worked initially at Peenemünde up on the Baltic Sea, eventually got bombed by the Allies. My grandmother was in buildings that were hit, incendiary bombs, and she talked about people running out into the water to safety, thinking they would be safe there and being strafed by fighters that would dive down low. And then Wernher von Braun himself apparently drove through after the bombing and picked her up and took her to the train station, told her to head home to her parents' house in Leipzig, that they would be in communication to regroup. They ultimately regrouped down in Kochel am See in Bavaria. That was where they were when the war ended. That's where my grandparents were married. The V2 program tried to maintain some secrecy down there by disguising their program as a hydroelectric facility. They're hauling large pipes around all the time. I always knew that they came from Germany during the war, you know, immediately after the war. I remember in third grade, I just had an interest in World War II and picked out a book that detailed a lot of the Axis, you know, what their plan was during World War II. About that time was when I figured out, oh, okay, these were the Nazis. Oh, wait a minute, that's my grandparents. Probably about that time, I remember my sister and I asking my grandmother. My grandfather didn't talk a whole lot. He was very, very quiet. Anyways, we asked my grandmother, what did you see? Did you know Jewish people that went to the concentration camps? And she says, oh, well, she was clearly uncomfortable answering the question. And she says, well, you know, we were told or shown that they were just being separated. I don't know whether that's how it was presented to the populace. That's what she suggested. You know, I suspect that she knew more eventually, whether that was initially the case or not, I don't know. She was born in 25, so she was fairly young still when the war started. You know, they were part of the Nazi machine, but they were also my grandparents. The FOIA request that my sister submitted to the FBI suggested that my grandfather was not the stereotypical Nazi, strongly racist, nationalist. And certainly there were some that came to the U.S. who were valuable enough to this country that they'd probably didn't care what their history was. And so I like to think that my grandfather was one of the better people within that group. But at the same time, he was certainly part of the Nazi machine. And I think the thing that strikes me is important to understand is that evil is not as it's portrayed on television or even on the news, where they go after, you know, the extremes. Everyone on the right politically is a, you know, KKK member. Everyone on the left can't figure out their own gender. They try to highlight both extremes in our society when that's really not the case for the vast majority of people. You know, my grandfather working in the V2 obviously was responsible for a lot of dead people. you could say the same for my grandmother. But I think it's important to understand that evil is done not by people with diabolical ideas and personalities. It's done by very normal people. I always wondered how my grandparents could have been part of that, the Nazi rise in Germany. How does the whole country go crazy? In retrospect, I think most people would agree is what happened in Germany. And it really feels to me like that is now happening, certainly in the U.S. and probably in a number of countries around the world right now. People that I have disagreements on how COVID is being presented, like with my father, I would have a discussion. And in the past, it was always, we would listen to each other's arguments. There was logical discussions. You know, he might make good points, I might make good points. But now there's a firewall. You can't discuss it. Project Paperclip, those weren't the only scientists that they brought over. They certainly studied Nazis and their ability to mold the population, certainly Goebbels being a good example of that. I think that was used by the CIA, if you look at their work at Harvard. MK Ultra, we all know two of the big graduates of that experiment being the Unabomber, Ted Kaczynski, and Charles Manson, both were subjected to that. Those experiments. And those experiments were all about how to control people. Our government definitely has a vested interest in that, and the Nazis had grown quite advanced in that ability. There was definitely a lot of people who saw that evil as useful. You know, if it could be used for their own purposes, that desire has never gone away, certainly in the U.S. So they always have to mix it with something good. Well, public health in this case. I believe in public health. I think it's important to control diseases. You know, hey, there's nothing wrong with that. Well, they don't realize that's being used to foist upon them. When someone says they're doing good, then most people would assume that they are in fact doing good and that everything that follows is for that purpose, which is not the case. Certainly Hitler used that, suggesting that the Jews were disease-ridden and a danger to the population. It's being used yet again. I'm still amazed that it spans continents now. I kind of see it as the metastasis of corporate power. It's usurped national power, the power of national governments. Corporations now control most of those governments. With the World Economic Forum, it appears as if they have formed their own government that now usurps all national governments and dictates to them what they will be doing. As Klaus Schwab bragged, they had penetrated pretty much everyone in Trudeau's cabinet. That's certainly also the case in Australia and New Zealand, and to a large extent in the U.S., and probably a lot of Europe.
My name is Avital Livni. I'm the initiator of the Testimonies Project from Israel, straight from the lab of the world. I started hearing about people in my surrounding that I know that got hurt after getting the so-called vaccine. In my guts, I felt that the only way to stop this silencing and to bring the truth out is by shooting video testimony, because once you see the person speaks to the camera from his heart or her heart, you know that it's true. You know that it's not fake. And also the other thing that I noticed was that in the Israeli media, there was nothing about side effects, about people getting hurt after getting the shots. Every person who got the COVID, they made like a long story with, you know, interviewing all the family, and everybody's crying, and in the end they send everybody to get their shots, go and get vaccinated, but nothing of the other side, of the people who got hurt from the shot. I started reaching out to organizations that were already active to get the video testimonies, but people are too afraid to come out. One of them even told me it's like almost a rape victim, that there is like a cycle of shame and fear, and they don't want to come out with the stories. Then I saw that the Israeli government is going to start injecting those shots to the teenagers. That's it. They're going for the children. I have to do something. 3.5 months later, the project was ready. Through these 40 testimonies, I could see categories of the injuries. And I divided the film to 7 different categories. Of course, the 2 big major injuries are the heart problems and the neurological problems. Then you have all the vaginal bleedings and miscarriages. You have skin problems. You have infections. You have blood clots. And you have the burst of autoimmune disease. We have almost 2.5 million views. All the media people are not interested in showing this project. On the same time, the Israeli government went on and on, going to the 12 to 16 and to the 5 and 11. When I understood that they're not going to stop, I started a second round of shooting testimonies that goes on until today. I have more than, in total, more than 70 testimonies. Of course, the new ones are also the people who got injured from the booster, young people. I have a case of a 14-year-old who got a few days after getting the shot heart attack. I have one case, her name is Estelle. Her husband, her brother, and another woman from the family, all three of them died of stroke a few months after getting the shots. For Israeli people, it's very difficult to admit that they got fooled, because we are so sharp. We know everything. These are Israelis. It's very difficult to admit that you got fooled, and so easily. And the second thing, and I think this is the most serious reason, that once you admit and you acknowledge all the injuries, you understand that you might have a ticking bomb inside your body. And what can you do about it? I published a post where I put all the information of all the treatments that I hear from people who got injured, that they told me that they tried something and it helped them. Now I have something to give them, at least to try. What's going on now in Israel is that medicines that already exist, they treat the COVID, they take it off shelves and they say, no, you cannot use it. You can only use experimental drugs like remdesivir. And we know what those drugs do. So it's the whole circle. Every day, young people died suddenly, most of them from cardiac arrest. Of course, you see also that there are, the total mortality rate is higher in this year than in 21 or 19. But still, people are saying no connection. In Israel, they start to say that the climate change, and since it's very hot, it's causing heart attacks. And people are buying it. Local authorities and all kinds of organizations put everywhere defibrillators. In Jerusalem, in all the synagogues, defibrillators. But still, no connection. Like when you drive a car and then you get a nail in your wheel and you go to some place to fix it and they're so nice and so decent, but then you find out that they are spreading the nails on the street. The new advertisement in Israel about when your heart is not working properly. Don't wait until it's too late. Go and check, make an AKG. And who is the sponsor of this ad? One guess, Pfizer. It's unbelievable. So we're dealing here in, it's like a war on information, and all the activists in Israel and in all over the world, we are trying to bring the truth out all the time.
Grace was my best buddy. She was 19. She had Down syndrome. For anybody who doesn't know what's involved with somebody with Down syndrome, Down syndrome children are a blessing. So Grace got a sniffle around September 28th. We got her right on the frontline doctor's protocol. We didn't think anything of it. We tested her with a home test on October 1st, and the reason was we just thought she had a cold, but we were going to go to a wedding that day, and we thought, well, if she's got COVID, we don't want to go. So we tested her. She tested positive. Again, we didn't think anything of it. A couple of days later, my wife tested positive. So ultimately, on October 6th, Grace's oxygen saturation was not able to be maintained above 90%. She was in the high 80s. We unfortunately at that time perceived that situation as an emergency. So when they recommended that we admit Grace to the hospital, the emergency room physician said, you know, we'll have her in here for 3-4 days, get her on oxygen and a steroid and come home. That made sense to me. 8 o'clock or so on the morning of the 8th, the pulmonologist came in the room and said, you're going to need to put your daughter on a ventilator in the next 2 hours. And I said, what is that recommendation based on? And he said, we did a blood gas draw last evening and she's not doing very well. So at this point, it's strange, but I was not wise to ventilators. I was wise to remdesivir. They never offered remdesivir to Grace, but you know, they were pushing the ventilator. And I was under the ventilator paradigm that President Trump really sold us, that you know, we have a ventilator shortage, we've got to have ventilators. So I just thought, well, a ventilator is just a tool in the tool chest. So then I started researching and found out the real numbers for a ventilator are more like 15% of people walk out alive. And out of those 15% of people who walk out alive, the majority of them die in the first year because of complications from the ventilator. They pressed us four different times to give them an advanced permission or a pre-approval to put Grace on a ventilator just in case she needed it. You know, so we never approved that. So Grace was never on a ventilator. So most of the stories people are hearing with hospital deaths are remdesivir ventilator. This is the state sanctioned standard of care in the UK already. DNR means do not resuscitate. This is maybe the most important document you could ever sign in your lifetime. So this isn't just a handshake deal. It isn't just a casual conversation. You know, this is something that is agreed to, it's gone through, it's discussed, then it's signed, and then you have the right to rescind it orally anytime. You're telling the whole world that if something goes wrong with you, you don't want to be resuscitated. You want to be left to die. So that's what a DNR is. So the next day was October 9th. I learned that they falsify records that day. Grace could feed herself, but she can't feed herself with the BiPAP on. So I order food. Food comes. I start feeding her. The nurse comes running in and says, you can't do that. I said, what's the reason? And she said, her oxygen saturation is only at 85%. And so, you know, every time you remove that BiPAP mask, you're reducing the oxygen. So I thought to myself, this cannot be right. I had my own oxygen meter in the room. So I put it on Grace's finger and it read 95%. So I called the nurse back in and I asked her if my finger meter was accurate. And she said, yes, it is. And so then I said, well, why is my $50 meter more accurate than your $50,000 machine? And she said, because the leads get sweaty. And I said, if you know this, why don't you proactively change out the leads every 3 or 4 hours or whatever it takes? Because this is the primary tool you're using to manage my daughter's care. And she snottily responded to me, you know, pointed her finger at me, you should just be thankful you caught this. I thought, you gotta be kidding me. You know, so now we're wise to, they're falsifying the oxygen records to justify. So, you know, what's the reason they would do this? And the reason they would do it is to justify a ventilator. The average amount the hospital makes when they can convince the patient or their advocate for a ventilator is $300,000. So they have an incentive to lower the oxygen numbers because the low oxygen then justifies the ventilator. They can make the oxygen numbers anything they want on October 13th. At 6:02, her oxygen on the finger meter was at 93%. The hospital recorded the oxygen in the permanent records at 44%. It was a complete lie. The monitor was disconnected from Grace and they recorded it at 44% in the permanent records. That's just, I mean, this is what they do. This is corrupt. You can't make it up, but it's that bad. On October 13th. So now at this point, they had already had Grace on Presidex, which is a sedation drug, for 4 full days. That's illegal by itself. That's the first cause of death. Presidex is only supposed to be used for 24 hours. The package insert for Presidex says it causes acute respiratory failure. Grace's first cause of death on her death certificate was acute respiratory failure. And that was a direct cause of having her on Presidex more than 24 hours. The 44 hours where we didn't have advocacy, they increased the dose of Presidex 7 different times. So Jessica's at least a little bit fearful of being kicked out. I was just kicked out 3 days earlier by an armed guard. So she goes home, takes a shower. She comes back, overhears the two doctors and this nurse in the hallway say the family's not going to like this. So she said, what are they going to like? We had to strap Grace down to the bed while you're gone. Well, what's the reason? Well, she wanted to get up and go to the bathroom. Now they use that as an excuse to increase the Precedex further. At 10:48 in the morning, she's at 14 times the original dose 4 days earlier. So now Jessica just thinks she's sleeping. We're not aware of any of this going on. There is no informed consent. Jessica just thinks Grace is sleepy. At 10:56, 8 minutes after the max Precedex, the doctor put the DNR order on Grace. At 11:25, they gave her lorazepam, which is an anti-anxiety med. 5:46, another dose of lorazepam. 3 minutes later, another dose. 6:15, morphine as an IV push. So in 29 minutes, she has Precedex, lorazepam, morphine. That combination would take anybody out. The package insert, the black box warning on the package insert for morphine says to not combine those drugs because they're contraindicated drugs that cause death. They're not supposed to do that. They're also supposed to have the reversal drug bedside and monitor the patient. After they gave Grace the morphine as an IV push, not a drip, at 6:15, not one nurse or doctor came in that room to monitor Grace. Jessica started feeling Grace get cold, and she went out and asked the ICU nurse to take a temp, and she would not come in the room. She just said, that's normal, cover with a blanket. Jessica called Cindy and I on a FaceTime call at 7:20, panicking. She said, Dad, Grace's numbers are dropping like crazy. I said, get the nurses in. She said, they will not come in. I said, what do you mean? She said, I've been trying. So we start screaming, save our daughter. Jessica said, there's at least 30 nurses in the hallway at this point because of the shift change. They would not come in. They holler back to us, she's DNR. This is the first we knew she's DNR. So we holler back, she's not DNR, save our daughter. They refused. That's another violation of every state statute because that's your oral override of, even if Grace would have put a DNR on herself, the fact that Cindy, being the medical power of attorney, said that overrides the DNR. They would not save her. They would not give her the reversal drug. So we watched her die on FaceTime at 7:27. Jessica ran out in the hallway during that 7 minute window, and the nurse read the DNR off the computer. He said, the doctor put this DNR in Grace and we can't do anything about it. There was an armed guard posted outside the room that wouldn't let the nurses come in the room to save her. One of the nurses had Grace's belongings on a cart, and she walked out next to Cindy and leaned down and said to Cindy, me and several nurses don't think Grace should have died today.
I became a political activist in 2020. So I organized a lot of demonstrations. I was arrested. Then I started in autumn 21 to paint large-scale portraits of lateral thinkers and resistance fighters. Some are world famous and some are less or not yet known. And then they see, oh, who's this? Behrah Sharaf, what has she got to say? And they read your quote and maybe they Google you, and then maybe it plants a little seed into their head and some critical thinking can start. So I want to remind the people that in the past of our contemporary history, there were always people who swam against the tide. Think about these people. They were important. I called it already in 2021 Performance for Peace because I kind of smelled it, that there will be a war coming up as a next step. I believe that we can only live together if we continue with dialogue and discussion. They don't want critical people in the streets. They don't want critical artists. And because art is a very strong weapon against governments, it can be, and it can influence a lot of people, they are cutting this off. That's why I decided to just going some places and just set it up. And whatever happens, if the police comes and takes me away, yeah, then they take me away. But I will not stop doing this. So this demonstration was in front of the RRD Capital Studio, which is one of the two public state broadcasters. I took along a sign where there was your quote, stop this genocide around my neck. And I stood there. One gentleman, he took me into a debate. He said something strange. He actually said, what would have happened to a Jew in 1940 who had expressed his opinion in front of a media house? So in other words, he was saying, you are allowed to demonstrate. You don't live in fascism. The Jew would have been killed. Today, you are not. I told him it's of course not about the Holocaust, because that's why he wanted to push me. I said it's about the time before. I asked him if he knew Sophie Scholl to point out what happened before the Jews were killed. Mm-hmm. The resistance was happening, and Sophie Scholl, she distributed leaflets and warned. And if we see parallels, I said, then it's our duty to warn. And comparing does not mean equating, trivializing, or relativizing. So I said, when I quote courageous resistant fighters like Sophie Scholl, I see them as role models. So then what happened was he filed a criminal complaint against me. He walked over to the police, and he said there is apparently Holocaust denial going on. And I was standing there talking, reading your speech, and all of a sudden a horde of police officer came up and silenced me, actually silencing you. If you don't want anti-Semitism, the first thing you should do is not silencing a Holocaust survivor. I want to highlight a few points of the global COVID regime that are reminiscent of dark times in Germany. In 1933, admission of non-Aryans to school and colleagues were restricted. In 1938, Jewish doctors were not considered doctors anymore, but only practitioners of the sick. Jews were no longer allowed to visit theaters, cinemas, concerts, and exhibitions, and were no longer allowed to move about in certain areas at certain times and to attend universities. In 1939, Jews were not allowed to leave their homes after 9 p.m. in summer and after 8 p.m. in winter. In 1940, Jews did not receive a clothing card. In 1941, Jews had to wear a Star of David and were no longer allowed to leave their residential district without police approval. And in 1942, Jews were forbidden to use public transport, to visit barber shops, and no longer receive meat, eggs, or milk. And then what happens in 2020? Lockdowns are imposed. All citizens of the country are only allowed to move in certain areas at specific times. They are being isolated and locked up in the name of health, forced to wear masks instead of breathing fresh air, not allowed to do sports. Unvaccinated, untested, healthy people were no longer allowed to take part in public life, enter shops, cafes, restaurants, clubs, cinemas, hairdressers, medical practices, hospitals, old people's homes, schools, universities, cinemas, theaters, authorities or offices, courthouses, hospitals, or use public transport. Critical scientists were censored and defamed. Critical citizens were no longer allowed to demonstrate. They were defamed of the mainstream media and politicians as corona deniers, right-wing extremists, and conspiracy theorists, and as violent enemies of the Constitution, and thus threatened, arrested by the police, and brought to justice. Fair trials no longer took place. House searches took place. Bank accounts were blocked. Critical people were fired from their jobs. It was suggested that professors should be deprived of their titles. The mainstream media reported in line with the government. Fact checkers were hired by the government to censor critical opinions. All citizens were manipulated to undergo a medical human experiment and to accept an insufficiently tested, genetically modified chemical injection several times without being informed about the ingredients, side effects, and long-term consequences. Children, teenagers, and students were forced to wear masks for hours in school and university. They became socially isolated. Old people were isolated in old people's homes, were forced to be vaccinated, and had to die alone. So, and now I ask, all these atrocities, the beginning that led to the Holocaust. I'm not downplaying the Holocaust, but I'm saying the beginnings that led to it were very bad, and we have a very bad situation now again. This is a crime, what is happening here.
In the deliberations of the Wannsee conference in 1942, when the final solution was proposed by Heydrich and the SS, there it was hinted that the public would not be very much caring about what was going to be proposed, because the Evian conference had shown that there was a lot of disrespect as to the plight of the Jews. So basically, we can go ahead, was what the Nazis took from this. The ideology of eugenics, which is a pseudoscience, which was embraced by many, many people of influence, of huge material wealth, first of all, because it gave them reason to think of themselves as something better, as something more successful, as something even more godly. But it is something which is connected to large fortunes in America. And this is relevant because when you see how the Nazis started, it started by way of support also from wealthy industrialists and wealthy families and fortunes and foundations in the United States. There are huge corporate interests involved. Those were in Germany the names of ThyssenKrupp, Hugenberg, and all those names which we learned in school. We may have heard also about Henry Ford and his anti-Semitism, but we certainly have no idea, generally at least in the public, about the involvement of many, many others, names as the DuPonts, General Motors, who were essential. IG Farben was very instrumental, but in Nuremberg, what was not tried was the involvement of many of the American backers of the Nazis, who were supporting fascism in the United States, which eventually even led to the failed coup against Franklin Delano Roosevelt in 1934, which also had the same names, Prescott Bush, and the DuPonts, and many other names who you can even look up in a congressional hearing. So when you look at the coup against Franklin Delano Roosevelt, instigated by people who tried to get General Smedley Butler to lead armed forces consisting of veterans, which was exactly what was happening in Italy and also happening in Germany and also happening in France. Very disturbing evidence, treason and scheming against democracy by way of oligarchs, which essentially is what corporate fascism is, a monopolistic cartel which tries to take control over society in general. And this is something which we also see today. We have the event 201, just one example out of many others, where you have planning desktop games which were funded by the same institutions who all or very many have a connection to eugenics ideology or to transhumanism. And this is also going on now. So therefore, it leads credence to the idea that this is something which is of a completely different nature than public health emergency. It is an emergency for global democracy instigated by the same forces which have a proven track record of being involved in this anti-democratic plannings of the past. The nexus seems to be intelligence organizations. In the 1930s, it was the Office of Strategic Services, OSS, of the U.S. Armed Forces, which played a very significant role in covering up the collusion of wealthy industrialists in the U.S. with Nazi Germany, even when war was declared. People like the Bushes, you see the same names being involved in eugenic and in secret societies, so Skull and Bones, Yale University. John Foster Dulles and Alan Dulles are two names in this respect which are very important. They have been involved in many of those events which lead up to the rise of the Nazis in Germany, even the Versailles Treaty, of what reparations should be demanded of Germany, how those reparations should be handled. So the institution of the Bank of International Settlement is something which is connected to this, which eventually will then help those to hide their dealings with the Nazis because it was all covered up by the Bank of International Settlement. Alan Dulles was the chief of the OSS office in Bern. He got information certainly about the existence of Auschwitz, and he covered this up. Whilst Oswald was not able to go after those who were plotting against him in 1934, he was apparently much more inclined to go after them in 1945. So there was the decision taken to disband, to dissolve the Bank of International Settlement. This was heavily lobbied against by the financial institutions, by the British. For example, John Maynard Keynes was head of the delegation of the British. He tried in vain to convince the Americans to not disband the Bank of International Settlements. The decision to disband it was upheld, but it was eventually not disbanded, not dissolved, because President Roosevelt died mysteriously. So it was said he died of complications from his polio, but this is something which also needs to be looked into in the context of the plot against Roosevelt in 1934 by the same people who are invested in the Federal Reserve and who are also invested in the Bank of International Settlements, which also is a private institution held by the owners of the central banks of the world, with many cross connections to Germany, Hjalmar Schacht, Minister of Finance, and Baron von Schröder. So those were the names who were dealing with the Wall Street bankers. And Alan Dulles and John Foster Dulles, being lawyers of Sullivan and Cromwell, a Wall Street firm, who were essentially working on behalf of those whites, also working on behalf of the U.S. administration and the Office of Strategic Services. So this is a huge conflict of interest, which was covered up. But also Roosevelt was going after Alan Dulles because more and more information had surfaced that he was a traitor because of dealing with the German enemy. And therefore, the questions around the death of Roosevelt need to be looked into deeper.
I come from Germany. I was 40 years, I was a teacher in Bavaria. I'm doctor in a diploma psychologist, specializing clinic psychology, educational and media psychology. Men are good, but they are very manipulated from mass media, and therefore you must inform to enlighten. In the human world, most of people have social feelings and communal bonds. They want to join with the colleagues, with the other people in the world. I have written articles about Rudolf Höss, commander of the concentration camp in Auschwitz. He has a religious and a very authoritarian education. He had no feeling for his sisters and for his mother. It was very important what father said, and he must immediately follow. And then under Hitler, he did the same. And we know how was the end. He didn't dare to think. And yeah, this is the same problem today. People forget to think. I always say, dare to be wise. Don't follow what authoritarian people say. Don't give them the might to solve our problems. No, they cannot solve it. Most of them are corrupt with the corona. People forget to think and don't think of the pharma industry or Pfizer, how much money they earn and how they lie to the people and don't say the truth. This is our world, what we believe, authorities, but what authorities? Bad authorities. I think this is a big problem with the manipulation of the mass media from the morning to the evening. Only anti-Russian propaganda. They want to shock us, yes, that we cannot think and that we follow. To obey, it's very important that we follow, therefore they shock us. The deep state, they don't want that people learn and start to think and are independent and free people. They want to separate us. So they do it, they start with the children. When they close the schools, children have no comrades. It's terrible. I know it. I was teacher for 40 years. I know it, how important it is for us, for adults also, but especially for kids, to have comrades, to speak, to play. But now they are isolated for our children, and we don't change it. The situation, our kids have no future. Crime against humanity. But now it's repeat. Never again must start now, must start immediately. Bill Gates buy a lot of land in the States, industrial food. Transhumanismus, they don't want that we are normal human beings, that we have chips in our brain and we are machines, yeah? They can control us. Hitler couldn't do it. But now they are capable to do it with artificial intelligence, with chips. Very slowly, people will. Therefore, I think enlightenment and to inform people, it's very important. Very interesting what happens in Spain, the Netherlands and Portugal. Farmers are in opposite with big trucks and tractors. And these are farmers, not intellectuals. But they think and say, no, we don't agree with your politics. We are hungry. People are hungry. They have nothing to eat. When winter comes, we have no gas. I think that the human sense of community awake very slowly. Think of the yellow vest in France. Now the farmers also have yellow vests. They have values, they believe in values, the salt of the earth.
So my name is Katalin Eger. I born in Hungary. I born 1927. I was 17 years old when we started the war. When the war came, we went to a ghetto in Kapuvar. After we went to Sopron. And from there in middle of July, took us to Auschwitz. And there was 3 weeks in Auschwitz, and after 3 weeks, I went to Bergen-Belsen, and, you know, and I had 4 siblings, and I was the oldest, and nobody coming back, you know, that's, everybody went to Auschwitz, and nobody coming back, and we finish the war, you know, that I go back to Kapuvar. I thought my father gonna be home, but he wasn't also, he didn't came back. You know, that's when was finished the war, I thought is maybe my kids is gonna be a better life, but when they grow up, a better life, but don't look like this is better life, you know. The kids or the grandchildren is very sorry for them. This time is very bad time, and those was very bad. I don't know which was is worst. I think this was worse than this one. I don't think the people never change. We said never again, but too bad is always. Again.
I'm Masha Orel, born in the Ukraine, Jewish family. Thanks God, my grandmama ran as our city was occupied. By the way, the same city which is affected so badly right now, it's Kharkov. So it was always a strategic point. Some people who survived, they told stories that they sometimes couldn't say whom they were afraid of, the Germans or the Ukraine anti-Semites. I've been watching what's happening all around the world. At this point, I'm talking about abusive use of the so-called anti-Semitism club, especially in Germany. This anti-Semitism club has been used to push people into the same trance compliance as they've been back then, unfortunately and paradoxically. At some point, I couldn't stand any longer what was happening, and it was the moment when Zusharit Bhakti was claimed to be an anti-Semite because he dared to make appearance of what is happening right now around the so-called COVID crisis and what happened around 8 years ago. So he was accused being anti-Semitic, and I couldn't bear any longer with several people all around the world, Jewish people, mostly Holocaust survivors and descendants. We said, no more. We got to stand up for Zucherit Bakhti because he is an innocent and full of goodness person, a decent person, kind of person you don't meet often in your life. So we couldn't wait. And we put huge efforts into educating about their parallels and trying to stop what I think is genocide by medical experiment.
What I got from my father is I learned how much he had to sacrifice in order to earn his freedom. First of all, in Europe, during the Second World War, and then when he came to Israel and he lost two brothers in the Israeli war. My father met, about 10 years ago, he met a woman that she's his spouse today. They live together. And she's an ex-doctor. She used to be she used to work in a hospital, and she told him my father has a pacemaker, and she told him, don't you dare take this vaccine because it's going to kill you. She didn't take the vaccine, and my father didn't take the vaccine, and then he is now 88. 87, and when he wanted to, you know, to join to a ceremony for the Holocaust memorial, and they told him you cannot join because you didn't take the vaccine. You know, it's such an absurd, such a ridiculous. But, yeah.
The reality that gets acknowledged by our politicians or the mainstream news lags the reality that we can see by about a year. You know, early on, my experience was that the vaccines did no good. And then maybe a year later, then we start to see that acknowledged, that they don't do any. Oh, first of it was, they will prevent the disease. Well, okay, they'll just make it less severe. And then, well, okay, they don't really do that, but they'll keep you from spreading it. Well, okay. Now they don't really do that. And now, in fact, they make it worse. I could certainly speculate on what their goals are behind this, but certainly none of them are good. Human nature is one of cooperation and groupthink. Humans evolved to defer to others, you know, on matters where someone else claimed to be an expert or hopefully demonstrated some expertise or knowledge. It's very easy to say, oh, well, I'm going to listen to that person then because I don't know as much as they do. Don't have the authority that they do. I see that regularly. That same biological tendency to think as a group still exists, but people who would subvert that for their own purposes can use that apparently across the whole planet now. I think a lack of historical knowledge is definitely a key method of control. You know, if you don't understand what has happened in the past, you're less likely to recognize it as it happens again. And certainly the older I get, the more patterns I see forming. What bothered me was that someone like my grandparents could become part of what the Nazi machine became. I don't think that there was ever a stage where they stopped and said, well, this is wrong of me to do this. Your country calls you and you do what's asked. And I think for most people, that would be the case. They would do exactly what was asked. You know, if they're asked to lock down, people comply because they feel that it's important to do what your country asks of you. You don't have to be evil to do evil. You don't have to decide to do wrong things to do wrong things. You simply have to comply, and that the people that are influencing and organizing from the larger level are in fact the people who are evil, in my opinion. But I think at the same time, every common person that's not in a position of authority needs to stop and think for themselves what's happening, what is my role here going to do, what's it going to be, what's the effect going to be. And very few people do. The norm is the abdication of personal responsibility, and certainly was at Nuremberg, and I think is elsewhere now, right at this moment. I think the elites know that there are shortages on the horizon, and they would prefer to continue flying their private jets to Davos while other people commit suicide because they can no longer afford their groceries and your gas bill. It still amazes me that Germany in particular is going along with the sanctions. Are there, I can't remember which minister it was that recently said that she doesn't care how bad it gets for Germans. She's going to stand by her Ukrainian friends. It will be an interesting year coming up, I'm sure. Certainly the Nazis were coddled by the U.S. I'm sure you're familiar with Henry Ford's collaboration with the Nazis, IBM's collaboration. We gave $2 billion to Hitler in hopes that he would use it to bludgeon the Soviets. Fascism is the marriage of corporate and government power. What we have right now is absolutely the marriage of corporate and government power. It's certainly not an equal marriage. It would appear as if the corporate power is using the government as an extension of their power. My son is unvaccinated, as am I. My wife is vaccinated, as is the rest of my family. I was encouraged by just about everyone to vaccinate my son. That was a line I would not cross. So it was very interesting to have to go against my entire family to protect my son's life. That's the way I see it. And it also made for a very interesting discussion. My wife and I sat down and I explained why I was concerned. I don't know if you're familiar with an Irish biochemist. I think she actually lives in Germany now. The name escapes me, but I remember seeing a video of her claiming that most people who were vaccinated would probably not survive the next decade. And there's certainly nothing that I've seen so far to dispel me of the idea that she was correct. She says, well, everyone I know may be dead in 10 years, which could be true. I hope not. It strikes me that there's essentially no correlation between intelligence and compliance or belief in the vaccine. And that's, I'm sure you're familiar with Matthias Desmet and mass formation. He essentially said as much, that it has nothing to do with intelligence. Mass hypnosis, mass formation, I think being essentially the same thing. Our government has clearly been working on it for quite some time, and I'm sure they're not the only ones. It would appear as if they've succeeded.
For Israeli people, first of all, people forget that all of us have been in the military, you know, 18 to 20. So I think you get used to follow orders. The second thing is, because of our history, we feel like our country, our state, our government, they are protecting us from all the world that wants to kill us. They are like our father and mother. They will not harm us. We trust them. We give our life to this country. If they say it's okay, if they say it's safe, if they say we will help each other by getting this shot, we will do it. The most intellectual people, the most educated people are the people that go by the narrative. From 120 members of the parliament, the Israeli parliament, you have only one now, an Arab lady, that she's the only one that started saying, we have to check the connection between all the cardiac arrest cases of the young people and the shots. She's the only one speaking. I don't have faith anymore in the parliament, in the government. They had their chances, you know? It's up to us, the people. We don't know for how long the spike protein is still produced in our body. We don't know all the things. So until we have something that we can rely on, detox. And you have certain things that help for certain injuries. For inflammation, there is one thing. For the vaginal bleedings, the other thing. If we look at the wider picture, I think they understand it's much bigger than the vaccines. And they know that if they take a look and start to ask questions, everything under their feet will collapse. It's very frightening. So many of them are not ready for that. As a mother, you can't live with knowing that you destroyed your son's body. The woman in the Orthodox, she said, I'm in this job for many years. I have never seen so many cases of problems in the period, strong bleedings or nothing at all, or miscarriages in the first trimester. heartbreaking. And now they want to try to start to do it to babies. The COVID is not relevant for them at all. Why they keep on doing this? People have to ask themselves. They know about the side effects, why they go on and move to the lower and lower ages when they know they're not in danger from the COVID. Why? Is it only money? Why? They have to ask themselves. Each and every one person in this world needs to stop and ask this difficult question. The answer is not nice. This COVID thing enabled us to see people for who they are. No mistakes. No in the middle. You see their people, you see who are the real friends. You see everything. In Israel, I saw a picture in a coffee shop, no entrance for dogs. And above it, a new sign, no entrance for unvaccinated. Hello, people? History? No, they don't see it. No, it's not the same. You are endangering us, oh really? And now you see the opposite. You see that the people that get infected the most now, ill, sick all the time, with various things, flu, COVID, whatever, you know, it's the vaccinated ones. Their immune system is ruined. I want to give a message of hope to everyone. The unvaccinated people got terrorized for 2 years. The truth is coming out, and we're going to a better, better place. The vaccinated people, there are treatments. Don't be afraid. Don't lose hope. Treat yourself. Treat your body. Do detox. You have all, if you look for it, you will find all the information. The first step for the treatment is first to acknowledge that this is what's happening. So I send the love and good health to everyone. We are the majority. The truth will come out, and we will win.
You have this white coat phenomena. Grace died because I trusted the white coat. And, you know, I don't want anybody to fall trapped to that. And the bigger picture is the elites believe we've got to control the population because the planet can't sustain itself. So, you know, they invent COVID and then they use it as a cover as step one to implement this massive agenda. You know, it's all out there, but I mean, people don't want to believe this. You can't, you know, and I didn't either. I mean, you think it can't be this bad, but it is that bad. I mean, I am just a dad who is learning this in real time. And I'm awake now. And once you're awake, you can't stop sharing this. This has become my life. It's all consuming because you just want to, of course, you just want to help other people. Jessica called me after one of the interviews and she said, Dad, Grace is looking down from you and saying, way to go, Earthly Dad. The numbers are staggering. The government has paid out the hospitals already as in the form of COVID treatment bonuses, including the death bonuses, $4 trillion. This is in the United States. $4 trillion has already been paid out to implement this agenda. We're the only country with over 1 million deaths attributable to COVID. We're the only country where remdesivir is the recommended treatment. The only one. The single most important thing that shocked me is how corrupt our government is. They are so corrupt, there's not one thing that they say that you can trust. You know, that it's just mind blowing to me. It's like, it is like zombies walking around. You know, we need a 16th booster. Let's go. I can hardly wait to get my next booster. I mean, are you kidding me? You know, their neighbor dies. The person's been perfectly healthy. Their neighbor dies. Don't you connect don't you even think, well, he just got the jab 2 weeks ago. Well, that has nothing to do with his death. I mean, my gosh, this stuff it's just happening right in front of you, but you refuse to connect the dots. That is also part of the banality of evil. They've trained critical thinking out of the school system. If you don't cut off the head of the cobra, it keeps coming back. But what's the head of the cobra? It isn't these individuals carrying out the the work. It isn't that they shouldn't have consequences and be accountable. I'm not against that at all. But eugenics never died until that stops. I mean, and that's in the heart of men. You know, so until the hearts are changed, this cannot be stopped. You know, history is always doomed to repeat itself because we don't deal with the head of the cobra, which is the heart, which is the heart of the man. Our research is this is a worldwide holocaust.
You can listen to Michael Yeadon, you can listen to Dr. Zelenko, Catherine Austin Fitz, a lot of warning. It's incredible that people believe that it's okay to have fact checkers, and they don't even look who's paying them. This cannot last forever. I mean, any totalitarian system where we are heading to, so at some point crumbled and crashed. It's just the question is just if they do it this time with the technology combined with the medicine, then it's, you know, that's very, very risky for us that it will be not irreversible. This is the biggest threat, I think, that even if people then wake up, it might be too late. Behind the curtain worldwide is to prepare the digitalization, to prepare the removal of cash money, to prepare all this COVID green passport solution for every human being. People are distracted and don't look where the threat for all of us is happening. We have censorship right now on everything that's critical. They cannot burn this. They do it in another way. They delete any post on social media. There are prohibitions of demonstrations. Anti-Semitism and censorship just happened right in front of our eyes. We had invited Andrew Barr of Jews for Justice from Great Britain to have a video message for us to play on this demonstration, and then the police asked us to turn off the speech. He just started, and then they said there's a suspicion of Holocaust denial. So we said to them, we asked them, listen carefully, yeah? And then they said what they said to us was that there's a danger that uninvolved bypassers could misunderstand something that would offend the honor of the Jews. You cannot cut off a Jew's word, because this was a common practice in Nazi Germany. And you're just doing this right now. Don't you see it? You take it off, or you get a criminal complaint. So this happened. They cut it off. It's really so sad to see how people don't connect with an incident that even in their families, somebody dies after the injection. And then parents even, you know, and it's like they don't see the connection, not at all. They don't want to see it. And if you say something like genocide, it's like they're closing their ears. We had a lot of genocides, and and another genocide must never happen, whether with gas or needles or whatever, period. And it's our duty to warn. And of course, I'm not a Jew and I'm not supposed to say it, but I'm still saying it because I just don't want it to happen. Let it happen again. People some years ago, they were super careful about their food. It should not be genetically modified. All this is thrown overboard within a second. This is unbelievable. People were going to retreats everywhere, yoga, everybody became a yoga teacher. And now it's like, what happened to you? How can you trust in pharma industry? Well, you just follow the money and you see what's going on. It's super easy. Yes, it's a lot of work to be thinking for yourself, to maybe even think about new political systems, about taking care, being responsible for your region. I was really feeling uncomfortable when I saw these people in the Third Reich just following all the rules and not speaking up. When I was in school, I said, if I would have lived in these times, I would not be somebody who would not have spoken up. That this was just so clear to me. How could they? How could they just not help the Jews to survive? How could they not help them? How could they not hide them in their house? And this is pretty much for me, like, now, how can I not speak up for freedom and for peace? Jewish Forum, it's an organization in Berlin, and they are writing on their website that you, as a witness or a Holocaust survivor, are downplaying the Holocaust. I filed this complaint, and they dropped it. They said they wrote me a letter saying they cannot find out who's responsible for this article. A different form of resistance is spreading. So they are doing something very positive. They want to become self-sufficient. They buy land together, they found communities, they grow their own food, take care of healthy water and solar energy, and they take their children out of schools and organize new and better, healthier forms of free learning. Power of nature. We really need to remind the people that we humans are not created to take chemicals for the rest of our lives, that we can only survive with a chemical injection for the rest of our life. I really believe people will get aware of this, and they cannot go on with this narrative. We need to stay in our light, in our peace, in our love, and in a very positive energy. And I think this is our biggest power. We need to stay in our humor, in our creativity. We should really stay in our hope and light.
I'm born East Germany in 89 when it changed into the West, and I traveled the world, and I was quite successful with my profession as a singer with the Yiddish songs. That was the reason why I could travel the world. The Yiddish songs is something I always tried to keep alive. We had these records at home, and we always knew people who spoke Yiddish. And my father, who was in East Germany, a jazz promoter, and one of his evenings he created with artists and actors and musicians, the Jüdischer Abend, the Jewish evening. He was interested to present literature from Kurt Tucholsky, but also from old Yiddish fairy tales or jokes and all that. And that was read by an actor or by himself. And he played Yiddish records, the records I knew completely and I could play on the guitar. And there was one day that I said, you don't have to take the records, I can sing it then. A bit later, I asked him why he's chosen to make a Yiddish Abend, and now we're two together. He read the stories and I sang the songs. He said, yeah, he felt always a responsibility about his own family who only survived the Shoah because they paid something here and there and had some contacts, so that the Jewish names were wiped out of family tree. Look, if really what I think will happen, that people will die, millions of people will die from that jab, then it is even bigger genocide, which they did with the Zyklon B. It happened and it can happen again. We have to wake up. If it's 10%, then we can overcome all bullshit. I always had a goal with my concerts of the Yiddish songs to show it's human beings, like everybody everywhere. Just human songs. Then I sang one of these songs. That song ends up with the words, Nein, mein Geist konnt ihr nicht halten, nor mein Körper erschrammen, which means you cannot kill my mind, my thought, but my body, okay? It's about overcoming. And of course, yes, it happened already. I lost 2 concerts. I was not invited because of that. The power is with us.
The intelligence community, which was in effect set up and controlled by Allen Dulles after the war, so the CIA was the successor of the Office for Strategic Services. Allen Dulles was made head of the CIA. Now, today, we have the CIA director Avril Haines being involved in Event 201, and it is rightly questioned, what does the CIA, the intelligence service of the United States, have to do with the public health emergency? Why are they involved? Of course, this does make sense when you see that the intelligence services are, in effect, closely tied to those financial interests which are staying in the background, whose names are not mentioned. We hear names of Bill Gates and George Soros, but those names are just front persons, and therefore the huge financial institutions behind all this have an interest in the way a public health emergency has been instigated in order to subvert democracy, in order to foster and to promote corporate, oligarchic and fascist tendencies. It is a Trojan horse. It is a way of deceiving the public. PSYOPs is a specialty of the intelligence services. So mind control is the bread and butter of intelligence communities, basically. It is interesting that the German Abwehr, as far as the East is concerned, was directed by Reinhard Gehlen, a Nazi general, a Wehrmacht general, who later became head of the German Bundesnachrichtendienst, so the Federal Intelligence Service. He was captured by the US troops, wherein in fact with his men he had retreated into a valley in the Alps and waited to be eventually picked up. It is said that he had with him many, many cases of documents, incriminating documents, not only on the Soviets, but also on the dealings with the West, with the Americans. A Navy officer by the name of Richard Nixon was involved in taking Gehlen hostage. So there is circumstantial evidence, at least, which warrants closer observation as to why Richard Nixon later was chosen to become a leading American politician, because he may have been privy to information which was incriminating to someone as high up as Allen Dulles. Gehlen, together with the Nazi lawyer Hans Globke, who was the co-author of the policies which led to the Nuremberg race laws, Globke became Adenauer's chief of staff in the Chancellor's office. Gehlen became the head of the German intelligence, and both men convened regularly to discuss who should be going to what position in the administration, handpicked by former Nazis, under control and in cooperation with the US intelligence service on behalf of those interests which are now also behind the COVID measures. The international organizations, the United Nations, but also the World Health Organization, was set up in the 1940s after the war, right from the start intended or at least capable of conducting centralized global policies. Wealthy investors and wealthy industrialists apply for public-private partnership with those institutions, of which they then later go on to make money, but also to implement other forms of their program, be it eugenic, transhumanist, and essentially anti-human. Hannah Arendt, when she spoke in the 1960s, she said it was not so much the fact that Hitler did get to power. What was shocking then was the amount of going along of the intellectuals, and we see the same thing now. The taking away, the stripping of basic human rights of individuals, but also of whole groups, and therefore this is absolutely similar to what happened in the 1930s. What we do have is highly toxic injections being administered to the general public without taking into account the side effects, the death, and the harm which is being done. It is time to call for a halt, to call for an investigation, to resist, to be civil, disobedient, be peaceful, but do not obey. We have a task ahead, this is for sure. We must face this. It is a very, very decisive point in time.
I go by those who have put out the plans And the Rockefeller Foundation, which has been in the forefront for more than 100 years in depopulating the globe, their 2010 lockstep pretty much laid out how the coronavirus pandemic would play out. The masks, the whole, the lockdowns and the isolation, the whole bit. And then there are several plans that the World Health Organization put out. The vaccination plan, 2030 seems to be a big target of several of these. And the World Economic Forum, of course, Klaus Schwab's book laying out what the Great Reset would be like. I mean, this is the most horrific, dystopian, evil universe that no free person would ever want to enter. Look at communist China today. That's what the plan is for us, for all human beings. So it isn't what I think and what I sort of surmise. It's laid out. What is so bothersome is that everyone doesn't read these things and become acquainted with the realization of what the plans are like. The other thing is the head of the World Bank, he said, we can't have money because we can't control it. We don't know how someone is spending a $100 bill or 200 pesos. We need control. And so they're going after digital money, a single universal monetary system, which they will have total control over it. This is for people to walk blindly into. It's worse than a concentration camp, because those of us who were rescued in one way or another, there were armies that rescued. There will be no rescuers. There will be no rescuers if people march into the concentration camps that they have in mind for us. The lockdown originally was just a dry run. And what they learned from it, unfortunately, is that they can get people to obey. That's the unfortunate lesson. One thing about the censorship that's been going on, which is very much part and parcel of the way the Nazis also, absolutely no deviation from the official line is allowed, which is that this time the internet has facilitated hundreds of sources that carry credible scientists who are telling us what the truth is, who are telling us what the data really shows, and who are not hiding it. You can't expect those who are paid to lie to let the truth out. They won't. It's only those who are not on the payroll either of government or big tech, pharma, the banking system. It's only those who are independent, and many of them have been deplatformed. The inmates at Auschwitz, whose task was to take out the dead bodies from the showers, from the gas chambers, and wheel them over to the crematorium, sometimes identifying their own families in the pile. Some of them wrote down for posterity what had happened and how it was happening. And they buried these diaries, more or less, in the ground under the ashes of the dead. Because what they wanted more than anything was for the world to remember, to know what happened, so that it never happens again. unfortunately, here we are, it's less than 100 years, and the world has pretty much forgotten and is, in fact, totally blind to parallels that could lead to another Holocaust, only this time there will be no rescuers.
It's a race between enslavement and expansion of global human consciousness. Because there are many, 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 many more of us than these sociopaths. Now, they're well entrenched. They're a Goliath, you know? They have a lot of resources. However, human collective freedom, the movement for that, may be unstoppable once we pass a certain threshold. And I'm advocating for civil disobedience, nonviolent civil disobedience, and absolute rejection of all these mandates. No face diapers, don't live in fear, do not isolate yourself, don't take the poison death shot. And resist, and take your kids out of harm's way by taking them out of the public school systems and coalesce together with like-minded parents, create a parochial or homeschooling environment where they could be taught deductive reasoning, analytical thought, and have a proper moral foundation. There were many examples in World War II where one Nazi with a machine gun and a German shepherd could corral 1,000 Jews wherever they want. Now, all those Jews needed to do was turn around and trample the Nazi. Okay, most likely the first wave would die, but not the second, not the third.
I agree.
Why didn't they? Because they're demoralized. Because they lost, dehumanized. They lost faith in themselves. They lost their humanity. And so we need to remember and teach people, remind them of their sovereignty, of their priceless value, that they matter, that, in my opinion, they're made in the image of God, life has sanctity, they have human rights, and it's not in the purview of any sociopath to decide how many of us live on the planet, how long we live, and who should be free. We're going to win. The only variable is the body count. And I hope we can mitigate that by expediting the awakening consciousness, and we're getting close to that threshold where it's going to self-perpetuate the awakening, and we just need to keep pushing and pushing and pushing. I don't know if I'll survive to see it, but what's relevant, it's not any one individual. What's relevant is the ability of the human soul to thrive and reach its fullest potential without evil and tyrannical forces trying to enslave them. And that is a hill worthy to die on. And I see the carnage and I see the misery, but I feel personally that I'm in line. I'm doing what it seems I was created for. It's only that internal feeling. I can't prove it, but it just feels right that to help people rediscover their human self-worth and to fight dehumanization, and to encourage people to fight for their own sovereignty and freedom is the right thing.
Keinul as de Geist am letzten Weg, Gott himmeln bleien, verstern bleien Weg. Vergimmen wird noch in sein Reus gebänkt, so, es wird der Beutel und der Trott, wir senden du. Kimmen wird noch in sein Reus gebänkt, so, es wird der Beutel und der Trott, wir senden du. Grünen Palmenland bis weißen Land von Schnee. Wir kommen um mit unser Pein, mit unser Weh. Ein Wies gefallen ist, das Spritz von unser Blied. Spotzen wird dort unser Gewiel, unser Miet. Ein Wies gefallen ist, das Spritz von unser Blied. Spotzen wird dort unser Gewiel, unser Miet. Zweck die Morgen sind bei Gilden ins dem Heind. In der Nächten wird verschwinden mit dem Feind. Der Rot versammeln wird die Sinnende Ajo. Wie ein Baron für sein das Lied von dort zu dort. Der Rot versammeln wird die Sinnende Ajo. Wie ein Baron für sein das Lied von dort zu dort. Das Lied geschrieben ist mit Blut und nicht mit Blei. Sie nicht kein Liedl, wenn ein Vogel läuft da frei. Du sollt der Volk zwischen Fahnen die gewendet. Das Lied gesingen mit Naganes in die Hand. Du sollt der Volk zwischen Fahnen die gewendet. Das Lied gesingen mit Naganes in die Hand. Da sucht nicht kein Mulas die Geist im letzten Weg. Gott Himmel in Bleine, Verstern bleue Weg. Weil kommen wird noch in sein Reus gebrengt. Es wird auf heute an unser Trott, wir senden nur. Kommen wird noch in sein Reus gebrengt. Es
wer da poltern und zittern, wir sind in Blut.